Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, and welcome to South Dakota's Day of Giving. It's a statewide focus on supporting nonprofit organizations that sustain South Dakota. Today, we're going to hop across the state several times and get to know the people helping people in your community. You can go online to sdgives.org and find all these groups and more information about them. You'll find links to their websites, information about the work they do, invitations to participate in Day of Giving challenges, and a whole lot more. We're going to start our hour with Dakota Resources. It's an organization all about helping rural communities innovate in ways that maybe they haven't even imagined yet. And joining us for that conversation, we have Tyrell Brocky, a marketing strategist for Dakota Resources. Nice to meet you, Tyrell.
Hi, nice to meet you as well.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Dakota Resources, because I'm always sort of amazed and surprised at kind of the things that come out of this organization. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Yeah, for sure. So our goal at Dakota Resources is really to connect capital and capacity to rural communities across South Dakota to really help those rural communities create the future that they envision. And we do that with five different key programs that we have. We have a learning network program that really helps with economic development leaders across South Dakota and give them tools and resources to help them do their job. We have community coaching that works directly in communities, whether that's with Chamber of Commerce or different boards in communities, community members, community leaders, to really plan out what the future of their community holds for them. We do RuralX each year, which is a annual event that brings rural shapers from all across, actually the nation this past year, because we went virtual. We work with our sister company, Dakotas America, to help allocate new markets tax credits throughout the nation as well. And then we have our community loan fund that also helps fund a lot of projects throughout South Dakota as well.
We're also going to welcome to the program Joe Bartman. He's president of Dakota Resources here with Tyrell. Hey, Joe, welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Sorry about the little phone trouble.
Nobody even knows a thing, Joe. All right, so here's one of the things that I think about Dakota Resources. And Joe, tell me if I'm right or not. But there, so much of the work that you do is helping people think differently, helping them make those connections that are already in their community, and come up with solutions that are totally unique to the place that you live in South Dakota. It's going to be completely different in one town than another. When the pandemic hits, that kind of thinking becomes really, really valuable, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you nailed it. We really believe that every community is unique. And so in times like these, it's really important for those communities to dig into who they really are and to be not just thinking about the economic impact of this thing, but thinking about the future and thinking about the kind of place that comes together and supports each other and supports the future of their community. So that's what we're excited about with the Rural Gives Challenge that we're leading today. Is these are times when communities can really see how thinking about the future can be so important, and thinking about how people who may have some connection to that community either grew up there, their parents grew up there, maybe they live somewhere else in the state, maybe they live somewhere else in the country, but they can still support that community where their roots are and help build a future for that community.
Let's talk about what's happening today and some of these challenges. There's prizes at stake. And again, people can go online to sdgives.org and connect with any of the people that we're talking today and much more. But Tyrell, tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you're asking people to consider on this Day of Giving.
Yeah, for sure. So this is the third year of South Dakota Gives, Day of Giving. And we've just gone back to the drawing board multiple times and, like, how can we support the rural communities that we work in and other rural communities throughout South Dakota? And instead of focusing on us raising money, my coworker Ellie Nas and support from our fundraising and development team thought, hey, what would what would it look like if instead of us asking for money, if we gave out money? So we've really asked our board to kind of help contribute to that fund. Like, hey, if we have X amount of money, can we ask or expect you guys to help us create this fund to give back? And so we have 5 challenges today. It really resembles what we did last year. Last year, we gave out 3 $500 prizes, and we decided to spread out the love this year, and we're going to do 5 $300 prizes. We already gave out one this morning to Burke Business. They have a long name, Burke Business Promotion Corporation, and we're actually closing our second challenge now, where we're asking people to talk about a volunteer in their community who really goes above and beyond. Which means we still have 3 more challenges left today yet. Challenge 3 is going to be lifting up a small business or entrepreneur in their community. Challenge 4 is asking them to draw out what a thriving rural community looks like to them. So we're asking them to doodle a little bit this afternoon. And then finally, our favorite challenge is asking them what the future of rural looks like for them in their community, which is really about the work that we do here at Dakota Resources and always striving towards that thriving community and that future of rural. So kind of what we have in store for today. So we're really excited and been engaging with all of our communities already on social media, and it's been really fun so far.
Yeah. So you're going to want to tag those #RuralGives, #ForSouthDakota when you create those challenges. And you can go on Dakota Resources Facebook page and like it there and find out more information. SouthDakotaGives.org is the, you know, kind of landing page for this whole day. And that #ForSouthDakota is how we're all tagging everything today. And Joe, once again, in our final minute, this has just been a kind of grinding, arduous year. And when I think of the Day of Giving, I think of, Dakota Resources, I think of the need, but I also think of just the number of volunteers and conversations and donors that make these kinds of programs function. How do you kind of enter this Day of Giving after such, variety of challenges in 2020, Joe?
Well, I think you're right. It's been a challenge, and especially because a lot of the way that communities that we work with get together and create that future is by actually getting together in a space and being in conversation. And that's been a big challenge this year. As we think about the thing about Day of Giving is it's something that we can do pretty much virtually. We don't have to get into a space together. But this is setting up the opportunities and the excitement for what can come next, as we are going to, believe it or not, this pandemic is going to end, right? So as we get back into the groove of having these important conversations and listening to each other in our communities, this can be a spark where we can point back and say, hey, we raised a little money this day. This is building our philanthropy muscles in our community, and telling people that this is an important way for us to think about our future.
Yeah. Joe Bartman, president of Dakota Resources, and Tyrell Brocky, marketing strategist for Dakota Resources. Thank you so much, Tyrell.
Yeah, thank you.
And Joe Bartman, thanks as well. You can find more at dakotaresources.org. Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Lori.
Have a good day.
The Brookings County Youth Mentoring Program strives to increase the resiliency of young people in the community and add protective factors by building and supporting consistent, encouraging relationships with trained, caring adults. Their primary program is one-to-one community-based mentoring for K-12 students in Brookings County, with additional small group mentoring opportunities. Find out more at bcymentoring.org.
It is the South Dakota Day of Giving. Well, how has the pandemic impacted people with vision challenges in the state? Who is the pandemic leaving behind in the workplace, in the economy, in social situations? We're joined now by Eric Rippentrop. He's second vice president with the South Dakota Association for the Blind. Eric, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
So this is a day where it's pull out all the stops, rally the troops, donors, volunteers. It's an exciting day, but it's also a reminder of some of the challenges that we've faced in 2020. And I want to start with you with those challenges. How has the pandemic made life difficult or different for people with vision challenges in the state and for the work that you do?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt about it. With this pandemic going on, it has affected and affected each and every one of us. Just recently, I know one thing I can speak of for the blind and visually impaired is different legislation as far as we helped with and continue to help with as far as voting and what makes voting in most easy way, most accessible way to vote for those people who are blind or visually impaired and having to deal with the epidemic and just different resources out there available to make them have more of an independent nature and status within society.
Yeah. So in a year like this, when there was so much mail-in voting and challenges with even staying healthy and getting, you know, navigating lines where you're standing 6 feet apart, just thinking about something like, how am I going to cast a ballot this year? Even if I've figured out a system in the last, you know, however many years to do this, everything is upended. Everything has changed. Tell me a little bit about the work that you do to help people with vision challenges or blind people in South Dakota, you know, access services, find education. Give us an idea of what the South Dakota Association for the Blind does.
You bet. The South Dakota Association of the Blind is actually the state chapter of the national affiliate American Council of the Blind. So within the state, we go and we do legislation, kind of sponsor different legislation and what new bills are being passed, this, that, or whatever. Kind of a mentoring and counseling group, if you will, too, to other people who are blind or visually impaired within the state, just to bounce ideas off of them and just to interact with one another. Another big thing is also for accessibility, whether that be in your everyday life or on computer accessibility or different standards within the day, just helping inform both society and people who are blind and visually impaired to the different forms of accessibility. Just on a short personal note, I have not always been blind or visually impaired myself. I actually had sight up until I was 28 and I was in a car accident, but I mean, I knew that blind and visually impairedness was a thing, and I knew that all these stuff existed, but before it actually became firsthand, I didn't know how much work went in just to make sure that the life expectancy, the life values were put in place. I had, like I said, I had sight up until I was 28, but after 28, due to a car accident, I lost my sight, but I can say that my vision is much more stronger now, and in part due to that, in part it would be South Dakota Association of the Blind.
Yeah. My brother died of cancer this year, but before he died, he had begun losing his vision drastically. And the same sort of thing, you went from thinking about life in one way to all of us making jokes and him saying he wanted to help her monkey around the house, and it was all very funny. And then things got real serious when we realized just what kind of life transition we were all facing. Tell me a little bit, and again, starting to look for those resources when you realize this is new and I have no idea how to proceed. You must deal with people who are in that emotional space as well all the time. Yeah, tell me a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I can speak from my firsthand. People who have grown up from childbirth being blind, I guess, they don't know the other side of being blind from birth. I mean, they don't know the option of seeing. And the way I describe blind, when we go out and we give different speaking events or to try to describe blindness, as I say, someone who has sight is like, hold up your elbow. What do you see out your elbow with your elbow? That's what I see. Mm-hmm. And just trying to explain that to the public to get them to know, but for the people who have had sight and then lost it, it can be a very, very tough and tough pill to overcome. And
yeah.
Again, mine was 12 years ago, and it's still a continuous learning process of what I can do to make my life a little bit easier and what I can do to make my life a little bit more independent. And bouncing that off other members of SDAB and talking has been a huge asset to me.
Yeah. Donations today to SDAB go to buy low vision aids. Tell us a little bit about what vision aids are.
Yeah. Vision aids, you can have anything. That's such a general term. We have accessibility vision aids to JAWS. JAWS might be an accessibility, meaning when I had lost my sight, I didn't think that I would ever run a computer again or go out on the internet or type a letter, but there's so much more. Yes, you can do that now. They have glasses that you can wear that for someone who is blind, 100% blind, can wear glasses and you can look out and it could be someone many, many miles away that on their computer is seeing what you're seeing and can talk into an earpiece and just let you know what's in front of you. And it's stuff out there that I did not even know about. And it's miraculous is what it is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, hashtag is for South Dakota. SDGives.org is where you can find sort of the landing page for everything for South Dakota Day of Giving. We've been talking with Eric Rippentrop with the South Dakota Association for the Blind. You can follow them directly on Facebook, or you can go to acb.org/affiliate-south-dakota. So it's the South Dakota affiliate of ACB, acb.org. Start directly there. And Eric, thank you so much for spending time with us, and thank you for the work that you do on behalf of people. It's really a personal story for me and my family, too. Thanks.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
We'll take a break. When we come back, think about the arts that you have missed in 2020, the longing you have for live music or live theater. On our Day of Giving, we're going to talk to Andrew Reinertz with Arts South Dakota after a break. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. This is our annual South Dakota Day of Giving special. Now think about the role of artists during 2020. Maybe protest art comes to mind. Maybe you're just feeling that aching loss of live music, movies, and live theater. Maybe you've fixed your car's headlights into a parking lot that has been temporarily transformed into a stage for dancers this summer. What is the essential nature of art? Andrew Reinertz is the Community Development Director for Arts South Dakota, and he joins us on this Day of Giving. Hey, Andrew, welcome back.
Hey, so great to talk with you, Lori.
Yeah, so people can go sdgives.org and find links and connections. It's kind of the landing page for the Day of Giving. When you use social media, hashtag for South Dakota. And Andrew, you're really shining a spotlight on all, not only the work that Arts South Dakota does, but all these local arts organizations throughout the state. Tell me a little bit about how you're approaching Day of Giving.
Yeah, so Arts South Dakota is a statewide arts advocacy support and education group. And really our role is to try to do whatever we can to support individual artists, performers, arts organizations, culture bearers all around the state. And so really this year for the Day of Giving, we're just really trying to encourage everyone to give locally in their communities to the many artists and arts organizations that really have impacted them. You know, I mean, so much of our community identity is built around these organizations and these artists and the sort of narrative that they bring and the opportunities that they bring in every corner of the state. And you know, we want to make sure that as we're coming out of this pandemic and as we're entering into a recovery phase, as soon as we hopefully can, that these organizations are able to continue doing the great work that they've been doing so far.
Yeah. Let's talk more about community identity. Not to put you on the spot because there's so many examples. So as soon as I ask you, you're going to forget. But give me an example in South Dakota somewhere where you can just say these artists have helped really develop that community identity. When you drive through this town, you see it, you feel it, you hear it, you know, something along that line.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, one example that comes to mind immediately that's been on the front of everyone's mind, but the grain elevators in Falkton. I mean, that's been a situation in which that giant mural, I mean, people have been traveling, high school students from Pierre chose for their field trip to go to Falkton to see all the murals in town. You know, I mean, it's kind of this really incredible thing that's really building this community. Or you look at DeSmit and between the Harvey Dunn plein air event and the Laura Ingalls Wilder connection, you know, this is really the narrative of a community. Beyond just the fact that really all art in its own way, whether you're speaking from your own voice or kind of picking up what's in the air around you, is a product of the community you're in and really represents that community and helps the people have something to come together around. You know, the stories that are told about your community really are internalized and come to define who you are. Or, you know, you look at all the great work in Lemon, South Dakota, and their kind of revitalization as an arts hub in that northwest region of the state. You know, it's all over. I think that's one of the big things we really wanted to push this year was this isn't just in, you know, Sioux Falls, Rapid City, Aberdeen. This is every corner of the state. There are working artists and creatives that are really doing a lot to make the quality of life what it is in South Dakota.
Yeah, that's one of the things I miss about the Black Hills so much, having not been able to get there. I don't think in 2020, you know, the Hill City Art Galleries or the list goes on, Black Hills Playhouse, these places that I just am hoping still exist when I'm able to get out there once again. This is also a time when artists, you know, visual artists, for example, people are innovating and doing some really amazing. How do we, Andrew, look to our artists to help us understand feelings of anxiety or isolation or connection or celebration and joy? Or we don't often think about where we turn to help have someone reflect that back to us in a way that we go, oh yeah, that's, and then we share it with somebody and say, listen to this. This is how I feel. This is the work artists, what is one of the things that artists do for us in society, isn't it?
Very, very much so. And I think that's, again, I mean, right now we're, what's that saying that's been going around where we're maybe, you know, we're not all in the same boat, but we're definitely all in the same storm. And you know, many of us are having very different experiences, but we're all having to deal with the year of 2020 and everything that it's brought. But really looking to your local community, finding those artists and artisans and creatives and how they're processing it and kind of starting that dialogue. And, you know, as consumeristic as just shopping local, you know, you're supporting your local Main Street businesses, support your local artists. You know, they're an economic engine for the community as well. But then to really engage with it and just open up your mind and your heart and your spirit to the work that's being done around you and see if it helps you process everything you've been having to process.
Yeah. I know, and you and I have talked about this before, but I cannot wait until I can sit and listen to the JS Quintet or to some live music. Some live jazz is kind of my thing that I miss so much. Do the artists, do the musicians, the actors, the dancers, do they miss the audience as much as the audience misses them?
Very much so. I mean, speaking only for myself as a performer as well, it's a relationship, you know. It's not just, especially like you were saying with jazz, with improvised music, but it's really in all of the arts. I mean, if all you wanted to do was purely just be self-expressive, there's absolutely nothing wrong with this, but then you can play guitar in your basement or on your front porch. But as soon as you're in public playing music, as soon as you're performing, as soon as you hang your art in a gallery, you're entering into a dialogue and you're entering into a relationship, and artists really, really feed off that. You know, it's for many of us, that's our only real way of communicating effectively. You know, some of us are artists in part because that's the way that we can connect with others. And so that's kind of something that's really been, I know a lot of people have been missing being able to do from the performance side as well.
Yeah. Yeah. People say, why are you going to hear them? Because it's different. Because yep. It's different. Yep. It was not. I love your recordings. I love your CDs. I think I have a pretty solid collection here at home. But it's not the same as being your part of at that experience. You're invited into a moment and you never know what that moment's going to be, but you always know that you're going to be grateful that you were there. So it's yep. Giving Tuesday. Thank you, Andrew, for the work that you do on behalf of artists and personally for all the music you've brought into my life over the years, and you will again. For South Dakota is the hashtag. SDGives.org is the landing site for all these organizations, and you can kind of click through. But if you want to learn more about Arts South Dakota and go there directly, you head to artssouthdakota.org. Look for them on Facebook. Andrew, thanks so much. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. It was so great to talk with you.
LGBTQ youth, adults, and allies give support to one another through Watertown Love. They spend time as a community doing projects and just being together in a safe space. Watertown Love hosts Watertown Pride, and they spread education to the greater community.
Well, this pandemic has found most of us spending a whole lot of time at home, and maybe we're a little even sick and tired of staying at home. But for many South Dakotans, home is not a given. For South Dakota Day of Giving today, we're going to welcome our next guest, Dan McCauley. He is Executive Director and Chief Mission Officer with Brookings Habitat for Humanity. Dan, it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much for the time today.
All right, tell us a little bit about your background and the work that Brookings Habitat for Humanity does, because I think most people, because it's a nationwide organization, because of the work of Jimmy Carter promoting it for so many years, people have an idea of what it is. But how does it work in Brookings?
Well, Brookings is one affiliate of, I think, 1,300 or 1,400 across the United States. We build in every single state in the United States and in 70 countries around the world. Habitat for Humanity is actually the world's largest home builder. Hmm. In Brookings, like in probably every affiliate across the country, we work with families who wouldn't otherwise normally qualify for a mortgage. We work exclusively with families who earn between 30 and 80% of the area mean income as determined by Housing and Urban Development. And as a point of reference, many programs through South Dakota Housing, for example, families can earn up to 110% of area mean income. So we really are working with those families who are economically disadvantaged. Those families partner with us through a mortgage application process. Once they are selected to receive a mortgage through Brookings Area Habitat, they begin working on hundreds of hours of sweat equity toward the construction of their home. And then at the end of that process, they purchase that home from Habitat for Humanity. We carry a zero interest mortgage for that family for usually a period of 25 years. They make those mortgage payments just like you and I make our mortgage payments. They simply make them to Habitat, and then we use that money in turn to build further homes.
So it's fairly easy to put myself in the moment where you're, you know, kind of handing over the keys, or that moment, whether it's a move-in day or something is, you know, walking over the threshold, and that feels pretty emotional. But I bet you see all these other emotional moments with volunteers working side by side, homeowners. Tell me a little bit about that part of the connection and the unexpected things that come up when you're painting or building or carrying or fixing side by side.
Well, you are right. The home dedication that we do with our families the night before we close on the property and they actually purchase the home is an emotional evening. I do not speak a whole lot at those ceremonies because I get very emotional, and it's difficult for me to speak in front of a crowd with all of that going on. So I turn a lot of that over to a member of our board or our construction manager. But you're right. The I can remember we were building, I think that was the first summer I was here, so it was summer of 2016, and we had just set the last wall for a family, and the homeowner jumped up and down with joy. And exclaimed, "I have walls."
Yeah, me too. You got me going.
And we have those moments every single day that we are working with families. And that's really the beauty of working with Habitat for Humanity, is that we get the, we have the opportunity to make the world a better place every single day.
Yeah, I have walls. For people, there are all kinds of ways, and if you're just tuning in, sdgives.org is the landing page for all these websites. You can go to brookingshabitat.org to get directly to Brookings Habitat for Humanity. But people are wondering, too, like, you know, can I volunteer now? We know we can donate, we can shore up coffers, we can do things like that, but are there ways to get involved with assisting on projects, you know, during the pandemic or in the days ahead? Who are you looking for to show up and do that kind of work?
Well, we are trying to keep our volunteers safe, we have limited the volunteers that we are currently using. So we have a group of builders who get together twice a week. They're called our foundation crew. So we're using that group because they're our regularly scheduled, skilled volunteer crew. So if we are using volunteers outside of that group, we're asking that they be sort of an intact group, a fraternity perhaps that lives together already, or a group or a family unit, or so people who are seeing each other every day. And then they can come out as a group of no more than eight to work on our job site to help build. We are also using some volunteers where we can send a project home with them, like folding our 3,500 quarterly newsletters. We have a team of women who do that for us regularly, and we send that back to their homes, and they do it, fold the newsletters, and then when they're ready, we go get them and do the contactless pickup and delivery. But right now, and we are a volunteer organization, and we have four projects under construction, and those projects are going a little bit more slowly this year because we are limited in how we can use volunteers.
Yeah. Much work to be done for people who cannot wait and who will feel the joy of the work that you do. Thank you so much, Dan McCauley. We really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you again very much for your time and attention to not only Habitat, but the good work that nonprofits are doing across the state.
Now I can go wipe my eyes, right?
Thanks, me too. Dan. Thank you.
We'll be back after a break again. Share your stories online. Hashtag for South Dakota. People across the state are doing that today as they get inspired for people like Dan McCauley everywhere in South Dakota who are making a difference in people's lives in some really tangible and heartwarming and astonishing ways. SDGives.org is the landing page for all of the South Dakota Day of Giving. We'll be back after a break and more on this Day of Giving broadcast. We're going to head to Crazy Horse Memorial and talk about living history on listener-supported SDPB Radio. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh, and welcome to South Dakota's Day of Giving In the Moment special. Crazy Horse Memorial has become a global attraction and a South Dakota icon, but it's so much more than a mountainous sculpture. It's a place that honors a living culture. Joining us now on the program, Lori Bekvar, President and CEO of the Crazy Horse Memorial. Lori, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Hello, Lori.
For people who have, you know, driven through the Black Hills, driven to Custer and seen the mountain from the side of the road, tell us more about what happens when you make that turn, and also what's happening with the foundation itself that many people don't see and don't realize is part of your mission.
Well, Lori, we remain committed to the promise that sculpture Korchak Joukowsky made to Chief Henry Standing Bear and the other Native elders way back in 1939 in response to their invitation to build and maintain a monument celebrating the Native American culture. And today, the carving of the memorial stands as really a beacon to the world, raising interest and welcoming everyone to come and visit here and be inspired by the Native culture, the traditions, and the living heritage of the indigenous people of North America. So the monument deserves to be finished. It is kind of the mainstay of the memorial, but we are much more than a mountain, as you say. But it's a beautiful sculpture that will stand the test of time for thousands of years in the future, telling the story. And so we are in a very exciting phase of the carving. So 5 to 10 years, we expect to finish Crazy Horse's left hand, his left forearm, his right shoulder, his hairline, and part of the horse's mane and head. But where the living culture and the living history come about is really through the university and through the museum. We are we have the Indian University of North America here, and we serve Native students from all different Native nations in two programs, a summer program and a fall program. So giving on Giving Tuesday really helps a student experience the Indian University of North America. And the worldwide visitors enjoy our three museums. We have the Indian Museum of North America, where we have art and artifacts representing over 300 Native nations. We also have the Joukowsky Family Life Museum and a mountain carving gallery. So really, you can appreciate Native cultures even if you aren't Native here. We really are a bridge to harmony and healing by using Native American wisdom. And, unity, the United States of America is really about unifying different cultures, and that is what we are helping people to understand here at Crazy Horse Memorial.
It's maybe a strange time to ask this, as we're in a global pandemic, and I'm sure your international visitor foot traffic is not what it was last year at this time, but can you articulate what captivates international visitors about this memorial and this museum as they come through? What are they seeking?
I think that our mission is what really captivates international travelers. You know, the Native American cultures, while they're different and they're similar, there are some commonalities, and I think that people love to learn about it, and it's also something that the world needs. And in my experience working here, I'm finishing my eighth year, Native American it's about a deep knowledge, deep listening, long patience, deep roots. You know, life is a circle, not a straight line, and everything is connected, and we are all related, and that is the message that I think the world is yearning, and both within the United States and internationally.
And you touched on this a little bit, but I'm hoping you might say just a bit more about this idea that, again, particularly for people who are not from here, and how important is it for you to emphasize this living, contemporary, this is not history, this is not a bunch of people who lived long ago, you know, this is a culture that is vibrant right now, right here. How important is that for you to make sure that people who live here and don't understand that, but from far away, that they're not looking at artifacts of a bygone era and that alone?
I think that's a very important point, Lori, because contemporary Native life is a big part of what we're doing here at the memorial. We have the Contemporary Native Art Gallery, where we feature contemporary art from over 8 different ecoregions throughout North America. So it is we honor the past, but we also honor the present and the future. And one place where that really bears out, not only in the museum, but also through the university. We have served over 300 students now from over 40 different Native nations. We are, our university, our programming is offered in partnership with the University of South Dakota and South Dakota State University now. And educating students while they're here is so important, but just as important is the student success coaching that we provide when students continue on their journey, and we help them in that journey and help them complete college.
Hmm. All right. If you are inspired, you want to know more, crazyhorsememorial.org is the direct website. Look for them on Facebook and social media. And of course, sdgives.org is the landing page for all of our South Dakota Day of Giving partner nonprofits across the state. It makes it really easy to connect with each one and support them in the way of your choosing. Lori Beckvar, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori. Yeah, thank you. Hello, everybody.
Yankton Area Arts believes that arts are fundamental not only to education, but also to a rich cultural existence. YAA supports advocacy, education, and programming that serves as a catalyst for integrating the arts into the daily lives of community members, whether through dance, music, visual arts, writing, or theater. Learn about their programs at yanktonareaarts.org.
For South Dakota Day of Giving here on In the Moment, we're spending our entire show checking in across the state with different nonprofits to inspire and think about how people are supporting other people in the state and also supporting other creatures in the state. So now we head on to the Black Hills Raptor Center. It's an all-volunteer group that's building a state-of-the-art raptor education and rehabilitation facility just east of Rapid City. Here to talk about their mission and their South Dakota Day of Giving activities, we have board member Julia Kittleson. Good morning, Julia.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
Also with us, board vice president Steve Benn. Welcome, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for including us. It's a great morning.
So this is just such great work that you do. And I mean, you just have to look on social media for how much people in South Dakota get behind raptor rehabilitation. So that's something that people are passionate about. Let's start with you, Julia. Tell us a little bit about your Day of Giving plans and kind of making some of those connections with people across the state.
Absolutely. Well, one of the best ways to connect people with wildlife is to bring a live animal into a classroom. And gosh, it's amazing just seeing the kids' faces light up when a hawk stretches its wings, or even better, if it poops on the floor. But of course, we're a little bit more limited now in what we can do as far as programming, just because we want to keep everybody safe. Obviously, that's a huge priority. So in preparing for the Day of Giving, I tried to get a lot of photos of the birds doing, you know, maybe interesting things like having breakfast at a kitchen table, and also kind of spotlighting the construction that we're doing out on our property, and having kind of the birds right next to the buildings that are going to enable us to really improve what we can do when it comes to rehabilitation.
Yeah. All right. So what goes into rehabilitation? You know, how long? I'm sure it's different for every raptor. But what are some of the basics?
This is Steve. Let me give you an overview of what goes on with an injured bird. I mean, we've all had the experience of walking wherever and seen an injured animal. And you say to yourself, well, what could we do? What could I do to help this animal? Whether it be a deer, a dog, a cat, or in this case, a bird, a raptor. When we talk about raptors, we're referring, of course, to hawks, eagles, falcons, owls. These are the birds that are commonly injured. Well, that's where we come in. We, meaning the Black Hills Raptor Center, receives a phone call, and our wheels are then set into motion. One of us will either go out and recover the bird from the caller, or the Game Fish and Parks people with whom we work and have a very close relationship will give us a call and bring us the animal. The bird will then come to us, and as Julia just mentioned, we don't have a bricks and mortar facility at this moment. We're in the process of building that, so we wind up going to somebody's house and do a clinical evaluation. We have a local veterinarian who works with us, and we do a clinical assessment of that animal. Where, when necessary, we then transport that animal to one of two places at this point. One is in Pierre, the other is in at the Bramble Park Zoo in Watertown. And they take on the care and management of the animal at that point. Thus far this year, we have cared for or recovered 7 or 8 eagles, most recently this past weekend. And just as I outlined, the eagle was recovered over the weekend, and on Monday it was transported to Pierre. I have to tell you that care delayed is care denied, and sometimes the time that it takes to transport an animal to the ultimate care facility can cost the animal its life. So that's sort of the mechanism by which these animals are cared for at this point. With a local facility, we obviously can tend to that animal immediately and not delay the care.
Julie, how much, you know, you're in phase 3 of the 7-phase building project, and, you know, today is South Dakota Day of Giving, and people are, you know, supporting organizations across the state. Tell me what does the completion, eventual completion of that kind of rehabilitation center do, not only for the raptors that you rescue, but for, you know, education and, you know, learning about these creatures and how they are, you know, share our world?
Absolutely. So once we're able to have the building that we're funding with this fundraising campaign, we call it the Rehabilitation and Research Hub. We thought about calling it the BBC or Bird Bandage Center, so we hear the acronym. So once we have this building, we don't have to have the birds endure that really long ride. And then when it comes to education as well, once we have, you know, a really nice dedicated place where we've got our education birds, that frees up a lot of time for us to coordinate volunteers and get the care of the animals taken care of. In the far future, we're hoping to have a facility that people can come and visit. Right now, we're limited to kind of as far as we can drive. We'll take the birds out to a school or a community event or a state park.
Julia, I'm gonna jump in here because I want to make sure to let people know they can go to blackhillsraptorcenter.org and find more information. And for South Dakota is the hashtag you're using all day. If any of these stories inspire you, want to share something about these Day of Giving events and the organizations, use hashtag for South Dakota. And the landing page, which makes it really easy to connect with everybody, is sdgives.org. Julia and Steve, I would love to have you back on the program. We appreciate your time today and the work that you're doing.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.